Hello.
Hi, Tom. It's Donna. How are you?
Hey, doing great, Donna.
Good. I think it's just us so far.
Yeah, so. So did you guys? Oh, there. Hello?
Hi, this is Malia.
Hi, Malia.
Hi.
Donna and Tom's on the line.
Great.
Sorry to speak for you, Tom.
Hey, everybody. This is Nan. Hope you're all
Hi, Nan.
doing well. Let me see who's there. Joanne.
Yeah.
Liz. Maybe I should just ask, who's there? It might be faster. Hi, Tom. Welcome. And who
Hello,
else?
Donna. This is Donna.
Hi, Donna.
Hello.
Welcome. Hi.
Malia.
Hi, Malia. So, has anyone got a winter wonderland at their place? Have any of you been impacted by this storm?
Oh yeah, this is Tom, and we got about 8 inches. It's just beautiful out there.
Unless you
Lots
have to
of
drive
snow.
in it, right? Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Oh,
And I had to
boy.
drive in it at 2 o'clock in the morning to take my son-in-law to a snow removal job, so
Oh, gee.
I was following snowplows down the road.
Yeah, yes, that's the best idea for sure. Absolutely.
Yep.
Oh. So, Joanne and Liz and Shalini yet to come. Malia, how are you doing in your living situation?
Things are moving in the right direction. I think my husband and I realized that we are living with decision fatigue. You know, the number we have to make every day is just
Oh,
crazy.
it must be horrible.
All in all, we're doing fine.
Good. Glad to hear it. All right. So, anyone want to share anything before we get started? Any wins or challenges that you've had this week?
I'd love to share a win.
Sure. Go
So,
ahead.
this is Donna, and my huge win was a little bit slow because it was a week one assignment, that it was for a vision board. And I used the software in Canva. I got a, I had used it before and then I canceled my membership. So I was able to get another like trial membership for 30 days. Just because I didn't use it, I had canceled it. So I was able to do that. So I had access to some really nice photos. And then, it was so easy for me, to just like brainstorm, say courage, and then look for a bunch of photos that, you know, came around courage, double click the photo and then move it over and you could twist it, turn it, you know. And so, I posted one of them. Another classmate had posted hers, so I posted one page, but I did a second page that has like 100 pictures on it. And it was just really empowering to think that I'm creating that for my life. And well, to know that, and then I had, again, doing some research for the class, I saw this YouTube video and it was, shoot, now I'm forgetting who it is, but it was really powerful and it was a couple of messages, a couple of things saying, sorry, I want to say quotes from the Bible, but it gave more meaning to me for creating a vision board because, of course, I know it's in the law of attraction and such, but I liked finding that there was, a base within the Bible, you know. So anyway, you know, for me, that's more meaningful and it's more value driven. So when I found that, it really just gave me the spark to go ahead and create that, you know, kind of like asking God to help me create that in my life. And so it was a really powerful. And then I was able to order a poster for $15. I haven't gotten it yet, but to me, you know, relatively inexpensive way to go about creating, you know, this vision board. And And I probably took a couple hours, you know, looking through each of those photos that came up for whatever word or value I was looking at adding to my board. Mm. And, you know, it was just, I really enjoyed it. So thank you for giving me the chance to share. And I did post it on the Facebook page, one of the two pictures, a little less personal on the one I sent.
Yeah.
Yeah, so thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for your post in the Facebook group. I thought that was really great. And it's nice to hear, you know, that you're getting that kind of feeling from the exercise, too. It really is impactful when you start thinking about vision. Do any of the others of you want to share your experiences with any of the week's exercises? Anything that you... go ahead.
This is Malia, and it's been interesting for me because I have done these sort of exercises for companies and for, you know, in my work life. But I find it really difficult to do it for myself. And
that's interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting, but I just thought that I would share that. So I'm not very far along with all of
that. So what is it that's been difficult for you? Where's the challenge?
It seems it feels like it sort of locks me in, and I guess that's what, you know, when I really get down to it, that's what makes it hard. It's like, ooh, so I'm really going to say this.
Oh, I see. Well, you think that by putting it into words, you're making it real?
Yeah, maybe.
What if you felt like it was an intention rather than a commitment? So
yeah,
that
I mean,
it allows you to be open to outcome then.
Yeah, that feels better. I also have a hard time doing, you know, like doing the self-evaluations, and I find myself rather than thinking about what I really think about myself, I think more of it from the perspective of, like, what other people think, what other people would say about me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's kind of an interesting reflection, too.
It is. It does make you think that if you have a self-image that's perhaps different from the image that other people have of you, then where's the difference? Which is the authentic you?
Yeah, I think that there's not like a huge difference really. That's not really the conflict. I think the conflict really is being able to say kind things about myself.
Ooh.
That's really hard. It's, you know, I was raised to be, you know, never to brag. And so writing down my talents and is excruciating.
Oh, okay. Well, there's a difference between bragging and honesty, do you think?
Well, bragging and honesty, I don't know.
I mean, if you're being honest and bragging too is, I think it's like outwardly promoting yourself, and by making yourself feel better, you make others worse about themselves. And that's not what you're doing. these exercises are for you and your eyes only. You know, you don't have to share them with us. And it's not bragging if you can honestly say, I'm good at this. Or, you know, I have a gift that's a, you know, a natural talent. And everyone has them. We all have a gift. And being kind to yourself is really important in order for you to be able to move forward. So, are you, would you say that you're lying to yourself?
No.
Okay. So it's,
It's just difficult to do. It just is, it's hard for me to write down my talents and my strengths and, yeah. So it's easier for me to look at it from the perspective of what other people would think of me, which is not different from what I think of myself. It's just hard for me to, like, admit it and write it down. There isn't anything like my friends think I'm loving and I don't. You know, it's not. It's just easier for me to frame it from that standpoint rather than say, I am really organized, or whatever it is.
So, are there things that you have done that you're really proud of?
Yeah. There's some things I've done I'm super proud of.
Well, then, how easy is it for you to say, "I'm proud of having accomplished this and this and this"?
That would be easy to me for me to do.
Okay.
Good start. So
if you were to just change the context of, instead of thinking of it as I'm bragging about myself, you know, if it's an easier context for you to say is, I'm proud of myself for having accomplished this, or, you know.
Yeah. I like that. That is, awesome. I think ultimately I need to get to the point where I can say that I am this, I am that. But saying I'm proud of myself for ... is a great place to start. It feels a lot more comfortable for me.
Oh, good. That's awesome, Malia. Thank you for sharing that, because I know it must have been hard for you to even be saying that out loud. And so I think that's a great step forward.
Thanks.
Anyone else? Well, I guess there's just Tom. There's only the three of you, so I say anyone else. Tom, you're the only one that's left, and you don't have to share.
Anyone else? That's me. I'm looking around the room going, I guess that's me.
You don't have to share if you don't want to.
Oh, that's fine. I just have a little bit to share, because going through these exercises has helped me to realize and organize, because I knew that I had certain talents and gifts and skills. But on the other hand, though, I feel hesitant in those. And so basically now it's saying, okay, this is who I am, and here's what I want to be for my clients. I went through this week, I did some quizzes and surveys, and I felt like some of the language I was putting in there was salesy, you know. And I have this overwhelming desire to sell, because that's exactly what I'm trying to do. But on the other hand, though, I had to go back to my vision and my how I connect with people and values. And I'm saying, no, I'm not trying to sell something. I'm trying to give them something. I'm trying to give a I'm trying to share something that will help them share within themselves what it is they want to do, exactly what I'm trying to do.
Yes.
I don't know if any of that makes sense or not.
I think it makes I think it makes a huge amount of sense, because you're right, as coaches, I think people have a concept of selling as being trying to push onto someone something that they don't want. And in reality, with our coaching business, we are absolutely giving them what it is they need. And so we're not selling them, we're enrolling them into our businesses. You know, just the way that you guys have all enrolled in, you know, in this course, and perhaps enrolled in the, you know, the coach certification program, because it was something you wanted. And so, you know, CTA helped give you your certification. Hopefully this course is giving you what you're looking for in terms of life purpose and values and exploring the inner you. And so when you're ending your laser coaching session, for example, with in a sample session, how do you end your coaching session?
Well, normally I would ask the person, has this been helpful? Did you find this of value? Would you like to do more?
Yeah.
You know.
Okay.
Of course, my laser coaching sessions are paid sessions, but I always throw a small invitation out there. We can talk again. You know, we can go through some other stuff again.
Mm-hmm.
And would you like to continue and work on such and such? You know. So,
yeah. I love that you said.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I love that you said you asked them about value, because that's a really huge question, I think, when we're coaching, is to ask our clients, where did you find the greatest value from this session?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and then when they can tell you, you can come back and say, that's awesome. You found that much value just in a short 15-minute session. Can you see how coaching could help you achieve your goal, move you toward your vision so much faster and easier than you've been doing on your own? And, you know, and then when they can understand that connection, then it's easy to say, you know, can I explain to you how it works? And then you just, you know, we could meet twice a month, or we could meet every week if you want, you know, for one of these sessions. And I bill you through PayPal. I'm going to send you a welcome packet that has, you know, everything in writing that we've talked about. And, you know, I can start right away. I'm excited for you. And I can really see that, you know, you connecting with your vision and achieving your goals is so doable. It sounds more like you're helping than you're trying to sell them something, do you think?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I think you said a second ago, connecting with their vision. And some of the surveys and all, I'm trying to help them stop and see that they actually have a vision. some people have gotten so tied up in their lives. And this is exactly what's happened to me. But this is where I go back to me, what these exercises were going through. It's suddenly making me realize, wait a minute, I have a vision. Okay, I should be helping my clients realize they have a vision too. Their vision.
Or not, yeah.
And I have something that I can help them with. You know, I have an mm-hmm. ability to guide them through that. So this has been helpful for me because, you know, if I get scattered, I'm going to say scattered, a little bit of chaos there, not realizing, not pulling together my own personal vision, then I think it's important. And I question myself. So if I'm trying to put together a vision for someone else, then why can't I pull my own vision together? You know, because I do find it difficult. I don't find this easy.
No. Well, and I think it takes practice. You know, when we look at SMART goals, you know, the SMART goals are all connected to the vision. And then as you complete your SMART goals and you go through the process of moving forward, then you have to write new SMART goals, you know, that are going to take you to the next step and the next step. It's all a series of small steps that achieve the goals, and the goals are, you know, connected to the vision. And so everything that you do in your business is connected to your business vision. And everything that you do in your life is connected to your life vision. And sometimes those visions are merged, and sometimes they're separated, or they're separate. I think so many people go through life thinking that life happens, and they just somehow at some point in their existence, you know, stumble into their life, not recognizing that we make up our own lives. We make our own decisions every day, our own choices, our own actions. And really, it's our thoughts that create our reality. And then our actions that come from those thoughts. And together, those changed mindsets and those changed behaviors make transformational change that has such an important part in our lives. So helping clients to understand that, I think, is really important.
Okay.
Have I talked to you guys about, I know this sounds funny because I've talked to a few of my classes about this, and I can't remember whether I talked to you about the whole concept of when you change your mind, your mindset, and when you change your behavior, you literally change your brain. And it's very similar to having a pathway in the forest that people walk and make smooth from all of their the walks along that pathway. And you decide you want to make a new pathway in the forest for yourself. Have I talked about that?
I think so.
Yeah, I thought I did last week. Thank you. I don't want to keep boring you with the same stuff. Okay. So I don't know if any of you have read Stephen Covey. He's my hero. I first read him back in the early 90s, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And that profoundly changed me in the way that I thought and lived my life. And it first, you know, started me on this journey of values and actions and so forth. And so my favorite of his seven habits is to begin with the end in mind. And it kind of goes back to, Malia, what you were saying about how other people see you. Because he asked the question, what if you died tomorrow and you were able to attend your own memorial service? What are you going to be hearing people say about you? And, you know, what would your friends say? What would your family and your coworkers say? And if there's a disconnect between what you think they would say and what you want them to say, then you have to start changing the way you live right now, every moment of every day, and make the choices that are going to take you on the road to making your vision of yourself and your life a reality. I just thought that was so profound when I read about that, because I thought, wow, I never thought about how my behavior today impacts my vision of my future. And I need to be mindful of my choices and my behavior and actions. And I think it's a lesson a lot of young people can benefit from, because, and I don't mean to be degrading in any way, but I think of young men in university, or even boys in high school, the way they treat women, you know, the way that they treat their studies. And if you think about, if you want to attract a woman who is looking for a husband who treats her respectfully and who supports her endeavors to be independent, you know, to be her own person, and you want to be a good husband and a good father, then when you engage in silly frat parties, or, you know, when you don't take women seriously, when you don't support women on campus, how can you expect any of these young women to be interested in you as a prospective mate? So it really is an important message, isn't it? So, I mean, it sounds like all of you have, you understand the importance of vision, and the connection between vision and values. So the vision is the blueprint, if you will, for creating a values-based and purposeful and intentional life. And the values are the tools that guide our behaviors and take that vision to reality. So thinking about your current beliefs, your positions and philosophies, your commitments, how have you changed since the beginning of this course? Any of you want to share?
This is Malia. I would say that I haven't changed because of this course, but I have been able to more clearly articulate my thoughts.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's been the biggest learning for you so far, would you say?
On the very first day, you talked about fear. And I think for me, fear is probably my biggest bugaboo.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember exactly the words, but something to the effect that fear is a lie.
Yes.
Unsubstantiated lie.
I love the way you put that. An unsubstantiated lie. Yes. Yeah, because fear is false events appearing real.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I'm so glad that that was helpful. Yeah, because fear comes up so many times for us. When soon as we go to do anything different, boom, there it is. And I think, you know, having a strategy for examining the fear and working around it is so helpful. I find that too. I had a mindset coach. Her name is Nina Cook, COOKE. She's in the United Kingdom. And I don't know if I've mentioned her before or not. You might just want to Google her, and you can, you know, subscribe to. She sends out a little video, and she's really has an amazing strategy. She says that most of our negative thoughts, our limiting beliefs, come from childhood experiences, and so. She was working one day on I am a fraud. That belief that comes up, you know, that says, who am I to think that I'm better than anyone else, you know, or that I can teach this when, you know, I don't know any more than anyone else. And she says, think back to your childhood when that occurred, you know, and was it in school perhaps when, you know, your teacher admonished you, and she says, what could be some other explanations for your teachers or your parents' negative reactions telling you that, you know, you can't do math, you're a girl, you're no good at math, or you're no good at science, or whatever. And so she asks for other explanations, which is so interesting, because, you know, you say, well, maybe she was having a bad day that day, or maybe she just wanted to urge you to try harder. You know, maybe it was her intention to, or maybe that was her personal belief that girls are no good at math and science. And what are some other reasons? You know, I know what it was. She would say, is it written anywhere? Can you see it in the sky? Can you see it on a building that says, you can't do math or science? And no, it isn't. It's only in your head. No one else can see it or believe it. And that was so helpful to think, you know what? There can be other explanations. And that means that my belief, my interpretation from that one time was wrong. And I can choose to believe that I can be good at math and science, because that person was wrong. So it's interesting Anyone else? What's been a biggest learning for you, or how are you feeling about this experience to date? I just want to make sure, you know, we're on the right track and that you're getting lots of benefit from what we're doing. From the stories that you've told, it sounds like you are. So let's switch gear a minute and talk about your life purpose. And I suppose that could be called your destiny. Do you know what you were born to do? I think, so of the three of you, have you identified, do you think, what it is that you were born to do?
Okay, go ahead.
No, I heard Tom, so we'll let Tom go first. And
Okay, sorry about that. Sometimes we hit the mute button.
No, I know, it's okay.
Jump all at once, you know, we want to get it over with.
Yeah.
You know, a little bit of humor because I think I was born to be a world dominator, really.
I love it.
go in there and really, I'm going to take over the world tonight. Besides that, I'm going to invite others to join me on that journey too, and that's part of my coaching thing. So, clear picture. When you ask about the definition of vision, a clear picture of a desired state, that picture's been fuzzy. And I guess it's like I'm really up close to a painting and I need to back away to get the bigger picture of it a little bit.
It looks like we lost some of our names.
So I think I'm getting lost in some of the minutiae, but this is helping me to step back and say I want the picture. I want that picture to be clear of where I want to be.
Mm-hmm.
And to take over the world.
Okay. So, you know, I think asking those questions, what does the universe want you to do? What are your unique opportunities? Donna, Malia, do you know, are you pretty clear on what your life purpose is, or do you still have work to do on that?
This is Donna.
Yes, Donna.
I'm not interrupting. So I know I'm still figuring it out, for sure, but I have a few things. The one that's related to my job is what I'm focused on, about what I can give back to the federal government, what I can do, you know, in my role at work, and what I become part of the legacy of what I want to leave behind before I retire type thing. Not that I'm retiring soon, but, and then the bigger picture for me for a light, a focus, but I've been having difficulty in actually committing time to think of it, because it really obsessed me, and it's more about something that happened to me and my children, domestic violence situation, and just with the police and just a lot of yuck. But with that, I want to take something good from it, and I want to change police departments so that they do a better job of their internal investigation. So I'm not sure how that's going to play out yet. But that's such a huge piece of what I do want to give back and who I am, as far as turning around a negative experience and making it a positive. And I just feel like in my role in law enforcement and in my career, I probably have a different view. So trying to figure out how to make that fit in. Right now, what that does show in my life is it comes out in my values of like fairness and justice, those are so important to me, probably because of what, you know, the life instances. So it's, yeah, so it's coming up, but as far as what I'm going to do with it and what's the purpose of my life, or I don't have that for that piece. And then the other thing, so there's like multiple things. The other thing is just really being a mom. I love being a mom. I love my children. And I know that that's such a driving force behind how I move forward in life. And caring in general about children. I was blessed to have four more children, stepchildren that when I got remarried, and four grandchildren. And so just the whole concept or thought of being a mom and how that goes, is definitely part of my purpose for sure. So I have multiple things going on, and finding ways to intersect them, I guess, is that.
Yeah.
Thanks for letting me share.
Oh, Donna, I love that. You know, it's so interesting because I think when we think about the constituencies, you know, that we want to be impacted by our vision, and I see a real connection between being a mom and the domestic violence incident, in that you have an opportunity to change those young people's experience and their own values and so forth. I worked for almost 12 years in crisis and suicide intervention in a telephone helpline, and our organization did a lot of work with, we were very closely connected to women's shelters and so forth, and I know that not all abusers become abusers themselves. Not all who have been abused, rather, can become abusers themselves. But all abusers have been abused. And the learning was that when boys live in a situation where there is abuse, you know, from a father against a mother, they often become abusers themselves, and they learn, you know, they don't learn how to treat women well. And when women live in an abusive household, when girls live in an abusive household, they learn that it's okay to be abused. And so because you've experienced domestic violence and you have that understanding of it, it means that you have the opportunity as a mom to make sure that your children and your stepchildren and your grandchildren all learn that abuse is not okay, that violence is not okay. It's never okay for a boy or a man to abuse a woman, and it's not okay for a girl or a woman to live in a place of abuse. And I think that's huge. And then your children and grandchildren and stepchildren will not only learn how to be respectful and be anti-abuse, you know, they'll go on to teach that to their children and to friends. And, you know, that's how, I think that's how societal change happens, is when we take our lessons learned and then help others to learn the lessons. Does that make sense, Donna?
Thank you.
And in terms of, you know,
this is Leanne. I really appreciate Donna saying, you know, being a mom is so important. And one of the reasons that developing this purpose of life is difficult for me is because it is so final and so finite, I feel. And when Donna was talking about being a good mom and raising the kids in a certain way, you know, at a time in my life, that was my most important purpose, was to raise my boys, to be respectful to other people, and to live their life with a purpose. But that's not my, I mean, so I guess now looking back, in a way, they are my legacy, but it's a chapter that's closed, because, you know, they're now 30 and 33, and they are living a life with respect and doing good things in the world. So it leaves me even more to, rather than using it as a a life purpose, it is more thinking about it from the standpoint of a life intention, and that it changes over time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's sort of like our values. They take different priorities, and it sounds to me like for you, it's your values are important, and like you say, leaving a legacy of living a values-driven life and, you know, helping others to understand the importance of that. Maybe that's your purpose. Like I say, when you think about the different constituencies, you have your family, friends, maybe colleagues, your children, well, that's part of your family, your community. You know, what kind of an impact do you make in your community? You know, if, for example, changing police culture after you retire, Donna, maybe you can volunteer to sit on a police board or something and, you know, help bring change that way, or write articles, or, you know, whatever. Yeah. You know, so that community is a way, and future generations, you know, leaving messages. If you're a writer, leaving messages for future generations through articles or books, you know, or podcasts or YouTube videos, you know, how your constituency might be the planet. You might be, you know, environmentally driven and climate control driven to start living differently in terms of, you know, the carbon footprint and so forth that we leave. Maybe your constituency is global diversity, and you work to make change in terms of policies where you work, or you take part in protests and Black Lives Matter and whatever. I think we have to consider all of the different constituencies that we have. And you're right, Malia, they come at different times in our lives. So maybe you're not impacting your children anymore. Your children, though, having learned those values from you and living values-driven lives, will go on to choose partners with the same, you know, who are also values-driven, and they'll have children and they'll teach their children. You know, your example, your desire for that to have a priority in your life, to me, it's very important, obviously, in your life. So it's just, I think it's, again, it's just making us think in different directions as we go over our code of ethics, our core values, you know, what it is that guides our choices and decisions, and we have to kind of think outside the box. Go back to Stephen Covey and these different constituencies and say, what do I have to do now so that I can be, or have the impact on these constituencies that I wanted them to have? Or that I wanted to have, I guess not, I wanted them to have. How do I make the impact I want to have on these different constituencies? And then you can kind of see the commonality. And to me, for all of us, because of the kind of work that we do and the kind of people that we are, it all comes down to helping others by being a good model of the values-driven, you know, purposeful-driven life. And maybe that's all and that's enough. I don't know. Unless you want to be like Tom and rule the world.
Tom, you'd have to beat out my husband because he has the same vision.
There you go.
I
you've already got a competitor now.
Yeah. However, though, it's my granddaughter that's going to do that. She's 11 months old, and yesterday I was in the landing with her, and she was headed toward the stairs where she's not supposed to be, and she turns around and says, "Wah-ha-ha-ha," and heads through the stairs. And I said, I wonder where she learned that from.
That is so funny.
It's going to be the kids that do this, okay?
I think you're right. My oldest grandson is 15, and honest to God, he used to self-consequence himself. One day he was sitting on the stairs and I said to him, you know, Nash, what are you doing? And he said, I was bad and I gave myself a time out. Oh, okay.
Yeah, that worked.
So, you know, I think you're right. I think the kids are going to be, and, you know, it's, I was talking about this with my husband last night. I know that there is so much apprehension about the impact on the kids of having been, you know, in isolation for so long. Both my grandsons, it's been March last year since they, you know, saw their friends. And I said to my husband, you know, during the World War II that I'm most familiar with, I guess, and during World War I mean, those kids that grew up in Europe You know, they were being bombed, and there's so many kids now in the Middle East who are living with bombings and gun violence and, you know, their homes being destroyed, and nobody talked about, you know, what's going to be the impact on them and their existence in the future. And I think our kids are lucky that maybe the worst that's happening to them is that they're being kept safe during a war on a virus.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
I don't know. It's something to think about, you know. I mean, it could be so much worse for them. And I think, you know, for the people that are really, really concerned about the kids are thinking, you know, can we teach those children gratitude? I know that's what I said to my youngest grandson. He's 13, and one day he phoned me, and he has ADD, and he gets anxious sometimes, and he phones me. He says, I'm the best life coach that there is, and he was concerned. He was just saying, I miss my friends, you know, and I'm feeling sad today. And so I said, you know, how do you feel about starting a gratitude journal and just start writing down the things that you're grateful for instead of, you know, focusing on the negative and what you don't have? Try and think about what's good in your life. And so, he thought that was a good idea, and he went off to do it. And I think, you know, that could be a good lesson for all of the kids who are in quarantine or, you know, in lockdown, is and for the parents, is what about focusing on gratitude?
Nan, I wonder if I can change the subject a little bit.
Sure.
And go to something that has been on my mind about the values list.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we came up with, you know, all the different words that make up our values from that list and beyond. And one of the things that kind of I don't know if I'd say struggle with, but a little bit, is I put together these values for myself, you know, what my core values are, and it makes me feel like the people that I associate with should also have those values.
Mm.
And I'm struggling with that a little bit, because I'm sure that that's not true. And, I'm trying to, wrestle with that a little bit. And I think about Brene Brown came up with a acronym for braving the wilderness, braving, and it was about trust, and she pulled mm-hmm. trust out to a whole bunch of different components, and it made her point was that you can trust someone in one area and not trust them in another area, and it doesn't mean that you have to throw the baby out with the bathwater. And I guess I think about values as sort of the same. There are a lot of people in my family who don't have a lot of integrity, and integrity is number two on my list. but it's just an interesting feeling. I just wanted to put that out there.
Yeah. Well, let me open it up to the others. So what are your thoughts about what Malia's saying? Anybody? Well, I think we usually hang out with people that we have similar values with, because law of attraction brings us together, and we feel more comfortable because our values, when our values are not in conflict. And, you know, there may be some values that you're able, value differences that you're able to overlook and say, I'll keep this person in my life even though, you know, we don't share that same value. And then there are other people that you think, this is not a person, even though it's a member of your family. You might think, this is not a person that I want to spend a lot of time with because of our different values.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, this is Tom, and I would agree. We're never going to have the same values as anybody, in my opinion. That's my opinion anyway, is that we're always dealing with people who value something. I value pistachio ice cream, and my wife likes caramel. Okay, yeah. So different things. Now, we're talking about little minutia, but even on big things, I knew a couple. She was, you know, don't read the politics in this. This is a long time ago. They both left since passed away. But she was Democrat. He was Republican. Okay. Now imagine being married. And you couldn't do this today. But back then, but even their political values, and yet they were one of the most wonderful couples, most loving couples I've ever known. You know, so each of them were different, and it was their differences that brought them together. Okay.
Yeah.
So it really, you know, we're not all the same, because if we were, life would be really boring.
Mm-hmm. You know? Well, so yeah. that's their go ahead.
It solidifies your values, I guess, in a way. It kind of challenges your values.
Yeah.
So that's a good point. That it makes you examine your values, which I think is probably really healthy.
You know, and then sometimes something happens and, you know, there's someone that you don't like, or, you know, you just get a feeling that you don't want to be around this person. And you're not sure why, and then you start examining your values and thinking, what is it about his behavior?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was working with a woman, and she wants to start dating again. She's divorced. She wants to meet someone. And so I invited her to start looking at what values, you know, do you look for in this person? And she said, I don't know. And so then we started talking about her husband's behavior, and she decided the behaviors that she didn't like, and the values, you know, that drove those behaviors. And so what she wanted was the opposite of that. So she was able to put together, you know, and we talked about what behaviors are linked to those values. And I think that's really important, too, to be able to recognize, okay, if this person, you know, if you're with someone and you're having dinner and you're with someone who's really rude to the wait staff, then you know, what behavior, what value is linked to that behavior? And maybe it's they think they're better than you know, someone whose job it is to wait on them in the restaurant, or is it that they just don't respect other people entirely? Is it that they're dishonest when, you know, they're being nice to you, and then they turn around and demean someone else? So I think behaviors and values are really linked. like when you talked, Tom, about the Democrat versus the Republican, I thought, I was thinking, so what other values do they have that allow them to stay together? And so I think, you know, maybe the value is respecting other people's opinion and allowing
yeah.
them to have beliefs that are different from yours.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, there are some people that always have to be right. And, you know, for someone like that, they could never marry, you know, someone of a different political thinking.
Well, yeah, their politics is not the center of their lives, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
You know, and their faith was. So they really did a lot. They had so much in there.
Yeah. So there was something stronger keeping them together than their difference. Really interesting. Yes. Yeah. So
together too. So, you know, I mean, the people have different values, and yet we can say, well, we do have some common ground. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, it'd be pretty boring if, you know, you agreed with everything, you know. I mean, relationships are triangles. There's her life and his life and your together life. And so, you know, you might have different interests, different beliefs, and yet there's the together life that means there are enough similarities that it's the relationship is worth fostering. But if there are too many discrepancies, then that's when the relationships break down. And even with familial relationships within families, you know, just because you're related to someone doesn't mean you're going to have the same values. And so it doesn't necessarily mean that you'll be doing a lot of activities together. What do you think, Malia?
Well, I think it's great. I mean, one of my values is just diversity.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. Yeah.
So it being with people who have different values from me, I think is good. I just have to recognize that I think you know, like in Tom's example, there are other things that hold you together stronger than the things that are different.
Mm-hmm.
Unless they don't. And that's probably not something
you want to
know.
Yeah. Unless it's something that you can't tolerate.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, could you sit down and have dinner with someone who's I went through that with my mother-in-law. She was a racist, and she would say things, and I just couldn't sit there and let them go. And I was the only one who ever challenged her. And when my kids were born, I said to her, if I hear you saying anything to the kids, you know, that are racist like that, I'm removing them from, you know, from your presence, because I don't want them hearing those kinds of words. And she was quite offended. You know, she says, this is how I feel. This is how I was raised. And I said, well, I'm sorry, but it's wrong. And I don't want the kids being subjected to it and learning things like that. And, you know, my husband was quite supportive. He felt the same way. And sometimes it makes us cringe. And just because that's what she learned as a child, she never bothered to research or do anything different or do anything that might change how she felt. And I never had any kind of respect for her.
I think that's one of the greatest things that have come out in the last, I don't know, I'll say 5 years, it might be 10 years, this concept of neuroplasticity. I don't think my parents would have believed that they could change.
Yeah.
And now we know you can change.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. I mean, it used to be if you had a bad habit, well, you just had to live with it because it was ingrained, and we know differently now. Thank heavens for neuroscience, eh? So we're getting toward the end of our time. So for homework, we're going to session 4. So you get an opportunity to try writing your personal mission statement, you know, going back over what you think is your unique reason or purpose in life and thinking about the constituencies to whom you'll have obligations. And there's a link. Franklin Covey, who's Stephen Covey's son, has a free tool for writing your mission statement. So try writing your own mission statement and vision statement. Maybe, again, looking at your vision boards and the vision exercises that you did and see if there's, if this is a good time for you to come up with your own mission and vision statement. And some of you might not be there. Yeah?
Did you say that link is in the material?
Mm-hmm. I'll give it to you now if you want. It's
get in the material.
Okay. It is in the material. But it's Franklin Covey, COVEY.com. And Franklin is FRANKLIN Covey.com/ M for Mary, S for Sam, B for Bob, /.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. So this has been a fun discussion today. Thank you all so much for your contributions. I'm sorry that Joanne and Liz and Shalini weren't here. I'll post I'll let you know as soon as the link comes up and for posting. There was something that in our discussion I was thinking, oh, I wonder if I could upload something helpful, but I can't remember what it was now. Anyway, if it comes back to me, I should write things down. If it comes back to me, I'll email it to you. Okay. So have a great week, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you again. Take care, everybody. See you next Tuesday. This is Tuesday, right?
Thank you.
See you then.
Yeah,
bye, everyone.
Tuesday,
take care.
Yeah.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.